This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 256 for Tuesday, December 19th, 2017. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me tonight, for the first time in a long while, Mr. Ryan Murphy from the Gamers Inn and Zombies Ate My Podcast. Welcome back, sir.
Hello. This is where we normally Google the last time I was on. I didn't do that before the show.
I think you were on for Game of Thrones at some point this year.
Oh, maybe.
So I'm thinking it was probably summertime. So roughly 6 months ago, give or take.
The summer was a blur.
So. Yeah, no, it's same here. I just had the same conversation with Lou last week, also from Zombies Ate My Podcast, your partner in podcasting crime, because he missed a month in November when he moved. So it's been 6 or 8 weeks since he was on. But it's nice. I like being able to bring back friends and do special things, you know, especially at the holidays. And I had tried, I didn't try that hard, unfortunately. I got busy. It slipped my mind. I normally send out emails and try to get a bunch of different people all in for a holiday episode. I'm busier this year than I normally am around the holidays. Most of the consensus without asking, just kind of general conversation with people that I podcast with, they're also very busy. So when you mentioned that you were interested in, you specifically actually emailed me and said, hey, are you doing a Christmas thing? I might be available. And I thought, yo, yeah, sure, let's do that. And it quickly is going to turn into something else we'll get to in a minute. But
yeah, but it's like a holiday party. It's the holiday party podcast that I look forward to each year. So I'm glad that I was able to, even though the door was closed, to stick my foot in and be like, hey, let's talk about some stuff and also pretend it's the holidays, even though it is the holidays. But I always felt like it was Joel opening up his home to a bunch of people, no matter whether they take their shoes off at the door or not. We're Canadian. We take our shoes off at the door. And, you know, just having some eggnog and the famous Duggan pudding. Just talk about everything. And you know, the funny thing is, and let's not beat around the bush, we're going to talk about Star Wars. But that's the great part about the holidays so far, is that now the holidays are now associated with Star Wars. And it's so craftily placed in that Star Wars comes out on the middle of December. So everyone wants to go out and see it right away. But then it's a family tradition to go see it around Christmas. So you end up seeing it twice. And it's such a crafty move on Disney's part. But man, I appreciate the holidays and doing special holiday ones. So I invited myself. I was that guy.
And I'm glad you brought it up, because your email reminded me, oh crap, I should probably mention this thing to a bunch of people. So I talked to Lou and I talked to Hammond and I talked to Brockett, and you know, I put it all out there. But everybody was coming back with I'm busy that week, or oh, I'm going to be on this week, but I don't have time to do next week. So I enjoy it. I definitely enjoy it. I don't want to sound like I'm backpedaling here. I wanted to make sure that you felt welcome and that it was okay that it was only you and I.
It was
a Christmas party.
It's the best Christmas party ever, because we get to talk about whatever we want.
Yeah, we don't have to answer to anybody else. All right. No. So, sounds good to me. But I mentioning that Star Wars is a Christmas tradition now is precisely, I think, what, well, not I think, that is what my family has decided. My dad and his girlfriend, myself and my sister, have gone now 3 years in a row. For them, it is always their first viewing. Sometimes for me, it has been my second. I think I saw The Force Awakens the day it came out. This year I waited and we all saw it together, but we happened to be available to go see it all together very shortly, after it opened. So it opened Friday and we went to go see it yesterday, on a matinee. So we were pretty quick. Whereas I think last year, I feel like I went with them between Christmas and New Year's to see Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might have been my first viewing, but I can't really remember. But it's cool that it's a tradition. Like I like, it's a cool thing to do. And you know, and you, there's always, you know, go to dinner afterwards, or you get together for coffee beforehand, or sometimes both. It's just, it's a nice thing to do for families. And I would imagine, because, you know, these films are family friendly, that it is become a tradition for many, many families.
Yeah, personally, with the Star Wars, with these new Star Wars films, and I'm not a huge Star Wars person. I like Star Wars. I really like it. I'm just not as steeped in a lot of folks. They're very much super fans, like yourself. And for me, it was important to go see it with someone who really likes it. So starting with The Force Awakens, I said to my buddy who I live with in university, like, hey, what if I drove to your place and we went and saw it at the big theater in Kingston? So I was like, oh yeah, that sounds great. So Kingston is just a bigger city near where he lives. And it's about a 2-hour drive to where he lives, and then another half hour drive to the theater. But to me, that 5 hours on the road total together to see someone who I haven't seen, I see maybe once or twice a year, mm-hmm. and then seeing a movie that comes out once a year in a place where I go once a year, it kind of all adds up in the positive column of being just a really good experience. And we've been setting that up 3 years in a row. But my real problem with the timing of Star Wars movies coming out is in December, weather is just so hot and cold, literally, where it's either snowing or it's raining, mm-hmm. or it's freezing rain. And I unfortunately missed our movie date for Rogue One.
Oh no.
And I mean, it turned out to be one of those, like, it's the mid movie, kind of like, not,
yeah, it's canon, but it's not part of the Skywalker saga. Like, it's not that line.
Yeah, like if I had missed Force Awakens, I would have been upset. And then after I missed Rogue One, I was actually having like weather panic attacks for The Last Jedi. Like, what's the weather say now? Okay, it's fine. Okay, we're still good. So I'm going to be able to go. Okay, this is great. And weather-wise, it was perfect. I think it snowed the day before and it snowed the day after. So we kind of hit that sweet spot. And I'm glad that supposedly in afterwards, like, Han Solo is still scheduled to come out in May, someone told me.
I think so.
I thought it was going to be delayed, but I guess it's still coming out in May. And then hopefully, I'm hoping that Episode 9, are they shifting that to the May schedule, or is that still going to be December?
I don't know. I really feel like they're going to stick with December, at least for this trilogy, at least for Episode 9. They may move it after that. But the thing is, like, Disney doesn't hurt at the box office in the summertime, because that's when Marvel does all their stuff.
And that was my concern, is because Infinity Wars is coming out right around the same time as Solo.
Oh, is it really?
So yeah, it seems odd to compete with yourself. I know they're different enough and big enough films that you're not going to really have that much of a problem.
Now that they're buying Fox, competing with themselves might actually be an issue.
Or inevitable to kind of have these overlaps. And it is kind of crazy when you put in that perspective where you can, with Lucasfilm making one movie a year, it's pretty easy to get out of the way of Marvel, where they're making three or four. So it's, yeah, with them buying Fox, honestly, that deal is so weird, because I was saying to a friend of mine, it would have been more expensive for Disney to solely buy the rights to what they want to complete the set, you know, the original Star Wars rights from Fox, Fantastic Four, X-Men, all the Marvel stuff. If they just bought what they wanted, it would have cost them more than $60 billion, because they're doing it strictly for profit reasons, and Fox doesn't get what they want, which is to offload a bunch of stuff that they're not interested in anymore. You know, they care about X-Men. What they don't care about is having this movie and TV infrastructure. They just want to do news and sports, right? So I'm on one hand, I'm glad they're buying a bunch of that stuff, but on the other hand, it is a serious concern, them buying a bunch of stuff, you know?
Yeah, well this is all provided it goes through. I mean, there's still what, 18 months or something before it actually could potentially be final. But at some level, you know, like, I mean, there's a lot of other industries where you can't do that. You know, you're not allowed to own this much of a certain, you know, industry, and they might reel them back. I don't pretend to know everything about that kind of stuff, especially in the US. But I hear enough about it in like tech news, you know, in terms of like companies getting too large or owning too many different facets and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I mean, it's the content consumer in me is excited that, you know, you could have X-Men movies that stories might tie into, you know, Marvel movies. And because you kind of like, okay, well, Infinity War is coming up, but after that, do they stop? Like, is there a Guardians of the Galaxy 3, or do they just kind of call it quits for now? But if they dive into other Marvel properties like X-Men, which is deeper than they've ever even really touched on, by vast leaps and bounds, then they could potentially get into some other, you know, some other stuff, and then still have like little callbacks or cameos or things like that. And I mean, it's so that to me is exciting. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, how much control do we want Disney to have? I mean, Disney had to go out of their way to mention, yes, Deadpool is going to remain R-rated. It's just like, yeah, but you say that, but I don't necessarily believe you. You know, I think like it's
a tough one to look at without the geek glasses on, because you see the potential of having a united Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. And then you forget the fact that 20th Century Fox produces a lot of films, not just pop culture icons, course, yeah, like Aliens and Firefly and all that fun stuff, but generic movies, comedies, all that kind of stuff that comes out. And then how does, like, why is Disney buying this? Disney's buying it for purely selfish business reasons of filling out their streaming catalog.
Yeah.
You know, I read an article about, you know, what's The Simpsons look like under Disney? Probably canceled. And a theme park.
Yeah.
You know, it's the IP that they want. They don't care about producing more shows because that costs more money than just the not. So, it's tough to look at. And I feel like there will be a lot of fallout. But one thing I know Disney isn't interested in, it's looking bad. And, you know, when they bought Lucasfilm, it was like, hey, more Star Wars. All the Star Wars you can eat. It's a Star Wars buffet.
Yeah.
And then everyone asked, well, what about Indiana Jones? I was like, oh, don't worry. Indiana Jones will be back as well. And that was really what everybody needed to hear, you know. Mm-hmm. And Lucasfilm was such a small little purchase that it went through right away, no problems, and they had these new movies. But buying Fox, there's going to be a lot of damage control there, including the fact that they said they're going to save $2 billion. Like, the only way you save $2 billion is by cutting jobs. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah. I haven't read up on it. I've only just been listening to the highlights on different podcasts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me, you know, from a podcasting standpoint, because it obviously will affect the kind of things that we talk about on this show. I'm curious to see how that streaming stuff is going to pan out. Like, from a technical side, that's where I'm curious. You know, when Disney announced they're going to be doing their own streaming service, like, that to me is interesting and appealing. I mean, it all boils down to price point and all that kind of stuff, but I mean, we'll see where they're going to go with it in the end. Something that, actually, this will all come back at the end when I tell everybody about my internet pick, but it's something I heard on one of the podcasts I'm going to recommend later, was that somebody's brain flipped, like, ooh, we could get the Fox fanfare back in front of Star Wars again with the purchase of Fox by Disney.
That's not a bad idea, actually.
You know, like, it doesn't really matter. It's just, it's more of a nostalgia nod than anything else. And I think it was mostly meant as a joke, but I found it quite funny because I hadn't thought about it, but I was like, oh yeah. Like, it's just like the ripples of this Fox Disney thing are just like never ending. Like, once you start kind of digging into it.
Well, people have been talking about it for weeks before the deal even was officially.
Yeah.
Locked in. It's a big deal. And yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a long year as we wait, but I'm sure we'll hear about it every month for the next 12. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. One thing I did want to ask you about before we dive, mm-hmm. we dive into talking about The Last Jedi. And that is, we touched base with Lou last week. We heard a little bit more about Zombies Ate My Podcast, but I wanted to ask, like, how are things are going with your podcasting stuff? Like, how's Gamers In going? Like, how did Extra Life do?
Oh, Extra Life went fantastic. We raised $4,000, our a new record for us. Each year we seem to crush it, even though we are kind of like, how do we top last year? And just, It's all thanks to the generous donors that come in and just open their hearts and open their wallets to these fantastic charities across the world. And we opened our team up as well to bring even more people in to play video games with us. And each team member was very active on the day and the days prior. I've even seen some of our team members still streaming to support Extra Life. Donations are open to the end of December.
Oh, wow.
We played in support of sick kids.
Yep.
And you can find all the information at the Gamers In website, gamersinpodcast.com/extralife. It's still there and probably will still be there until I remember to take it down sometime in the new year. But it's
well, proper thing, right?
Yeah, it went really well and it was a lot of fun. And really, 24 hours of gaming sounds like a great deal of fun, which it is, for about 18 hours.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and it was all streamed, it's all archived from what I understand. So if you were to go and watch the archive, wherever, I think it was streamed at Jocelyn's channel, twitch.tv/JossPlays, there's some clips in there of late night 7 a.m. Ryan telling my fellow co-gamers to STFU because I'm so tired and so cranky.
Yeah.
And we were playing Battlegrounds, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with that game, but it's not my cup of tea,
right?
Especially on no sleep and having played for about 6 hours straight. So I eventually just got to the point where I was like, "Ugh, guys, just pick a point on the map and let's get shot and go to the next round.
Yeah,
it'll be fine." But no, we had a lot of fun. Gamers In's actually recording our 300th episode tomorrow or Wednesday this week.
Nice.
And that's pretty crazy. We're going to do Game of the Year, talking about our favorite games. And Zombies Ate My Podcast is in a weird state as our schedules are in flux, which isn't the weirdness. What's weird is and I'm sure Lou talked about it. I think he did because I listened to the episode. The weird thing is the core tenant, similar to Game of Thrones with Citadel Cafe, The Walking Dead is this pillar of Zombies Ate My Podcast. And that pillar is crumbling. You know, Walking Dead is having a rough go.
Yeah.
And I'm very forgiving, very positive about things that I love or have loved in terms of pop culture. Man, I've been a Nintendo fan since childhood, and that those franchises have gone through the ringer in the last 10 years, and it's been tough to stay on that. But with The Walking Dead, it's suffering from not being able to please everybody to poor, just downright bad episodes, which I will cop to. There's been some bad episodes which have caused some internal strife between the co-hosts. But I think what we all agree upon is we still love zombies and that the show will continue to exist, even though The Walking Dead seems to be heading down this path of no return. And we'll still look forward to covering the show as it continues. It's not going anywhere. It's still making AMC money. But I don't know. I want to know your opinion because I know Lou talked about it on the show, and I'm not looking to start podcast wars or anything, but ratings, is talking about ratings not the most annoying thing ever? And I'm not specifically targeting Lou on this, so Lou, if you're listening, don't feel like you're being
yeah being targeted. Well, I don't,
ratings tough, right?
It's, yeah,
it just feels, it's a made-up number, is it not? It's science, but
we touched on something similar in that we were talking a lot about Netflix, and the difference that I brought up between Netflix and rating is that Netflix has hard data. People either watched this, didn't watch it, watched it 100 times, or got halfway through and stopped. You know, like, did they know everything about a show that they put out or is streaming on their network, and they can give that data to, I mean, or sell that data to somebody or have that data internally. But as far as I know, like, Nielsen ratings and stuff, like, you have to be one of the households with a box sort of idea. I mean, I'm using the term box. It's probably not a box anymore, but like that kind of thing. It's a sampling. It's not water, you know, it's not real numbers. It's not necessarily survey census stuff, you know? And I don't necessarily put a lot of stock in ratings. Just like when I was a kid, like, I never put a lot of stock in movie reviews. Like, I used to go see every Arnold Schwarzenegger movie that came out, and I liked all of them. Some of them I still like. Critics always hated them. Always. They never had anything good to say because they're reviewing it from the standpoint of, like, is this Oscar worthy? Well, no, of course it's not Oscar worthy. But I would read reviews in the paper, be like, well, that guy hates it, but I don't care. You know, and I feel like there's a certain, well, there's always a certain level of subjectivity, right? So I mean, if you're going to review something, like there's a certain level, like I liked it, but you didn't, blah, blah, blah. Here's why. Yes, there's always technical things like, okay, well, the acting is not great. And if everybody can agree on that, then it's probably a technical thing that's going wrong with the show, or it's not filmed very well, etc. But I would much prefer to talk about, I would rather have reasonable discussions about, you know, opinion and educated discussion about that than just deal with like ratings and, yeah, and stuff like that. And I don't know, like, do ratings, with as much streaming is going on right now, like, do ratings really matter that much?
Well, this is the point that I'm sure Lou is screaming at his earbuds. They do matter to AMC, and that's why they're brought up a lot, is because AMC being proven to be this very money hungry, penny pinching corporation making television shows. If the show isn't profitable, and the way the show is profitable is not just from merchandise, which I'm pretty sure Walking Dead could sell anything with a Daryl crossbow on it, no problem. to the point where I have a Christmas bulb with a Daryl crossbow on it. So nice. You know what? We do not question the AMC merchandise machine, but from selling advertisements, that's the biggest deal with ratings, is that you use this ratings, this science, whether it's pseudoscience or you know, not accurate, it's still used to sell advertising, and that determines the success of a show with a corporation that is more interested in money than telling a story. Now, I'm being less of a cynic, see it as this is the story they're looking to tell, and it has nothing to do with money, but money keeps the lights on. So I don't feel like the show is affected by that, by a monetization issue. I just think that people kind of see it that way because of, it's just tough. And ratings, I agree with you. Netflix, this is why I love the next Netflix model, is that when a show does well, they know that it's doing well, and then they can renew it and specialize it for a second season or a third season. Like, look at Stranger Things. I haven't had a chance to watch it, but I hear that it is a fantastic follow-up to the first season, probably mostly due to the fact that they were able to look at all the feedback coming in, the numbers and the subscriptions that were coming in. Like, that's a big point of data right there. Like, oh, we got a 20% bump in subscriptions when Stranger Things went viral. I'm pretty sure we order a second season. And with The Walking Dead, it's kind of going to be, it's probably going to be death by a thousand cuts for that show, in that that's the frustrating part with especially The Walking Dead, where the comics will go forever. So the source material it's based on will go forever as long as it's profitable for Kirkman, which doesn't show signs of stopping because it's a comic book. It takes a team of people to make, I'm not discounting that, but not as much or as expensive as a television show.
Correct.
I think we can agree on that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the issue. A TV show can't last forever. It's got to end. Mm-hmm. And you and I have both watched shows that don't have an end in mind, and they just peter out, and it's the most depressing thing in the world.
Yep.
And that's what we're worried about, I think, is that they're working towards an end game, and it's not making people happy because people are used to the comic books. So it's suffering in that light. But you know what? We didn't come here to talk about zombies, but I did appreciate that. And Lou, again, if you're listening, I apologize. But well, he's not wrong. He's definitely not wrong. He's more right than I on many occasions. But if you want to hear Lou and I disagree back and forth for about an hour, you can listen to the most recent episode of Zombies in My Podcast. Which we even got an email from a listener that we haven't addressed on the show yet, but an email from a listener saying, like, I don't know whether it was Bob just being too kind or gentle, but I'd really like to know his opinion of the mid-season finale, because it seemed like Ryan and Lou just kept going back and forth. Which Bob did say that it was not the case. He shared his opinion just as we were more vocal.
You were vocal about it, right on. Yeah. Well, I have a question, actually, that I don't want you to answer now, but I want you to take to the next episode of Zombies Ate My Podcast.
Okay.
And that is, seeing that Walking Dead is most likely ending, and that some shows that we've actually discussed on the Citadel Cafe recently have been canceled on their networks, but then have then been picked up by Netflix. Would you like to see AMC end Walking Dead and have Netflix pick up the production of The Walking Dead? Or would you rather the whole thing just end and then them, you know, maybe go into a spinoff or some other thing or new characters and, you know, or new perspective or something like that. So I take that to Zombies Ate My Podcast. I'd be curious, especially with Lou and I's discussion on streaming last week. I'd be curious what he would have to say as well. But
that's a good one. I will take that for sure.
So at this point, I have to throw out a giant spoiler lightsaber and say, hey, we are going to talk about The Last Jedi, and it only opened like 4 days ago. So if you have not seen it, then just bail now. Don't even bother. Probably some of you that were listening and heard us even mention The Last Jedi in a little bit of, like, you know, Christmas tradition talk at the top of the show probably bailed already. All the power to you. Because I avoided the internet for 4 days, quite difficultly, actually, to make sure I didn't get any spoilers as far as The Last Jedi was concerned. And it's the real deal. There's a lot of things that we could really spoil for you. So bail. Come back later, go see the movie, and then come back and listen, because I would hate to ruin it for somebody. So that's out there. You saw it Sunday, I think?
I did. Yeah. I traveled to see it Sunday. And I saw it with a good friend of mine who's a huge Star Wars fan. And I said at the top of the show, I don't dislike Star Wars. I don't love Star Wars. I'm in that like phase where this new trilogy, and honestly, the Disney age of Star Wars is really my first solid introduction, because the home trilogy, the original trilogy, was just a VHS collection that I got after Episode One. And I'm not that young that I would have missed out on the original trilogy. It just took a while, because I think Episode One came out in 99.
Yep, I think so.
And I would have been 15. So I lived 15 years not really watching Star Wars, and then I watched Episode One. And it's like, well, what are these? And my mom's like, oh, well, they're this. You know, there's this original trilogy. Well, let's watch it. And that's where it kind of started, and never really latched onto it at all, because I think the prequel trilogy just felt like, you know, standard sci-fi fantasy stuff that just didn't really click with me. But then these new movies have been really something special for me, and making me look forward to especially that Rian Johnson trilogy that's coming out, that's going to be positioned in a way that when it eventually comes out, Caden will be of an age, and Abigail as well, will be of an age where we can go see it as a family.
Right.
And then that will be their introduction, similar to how people talk about their introduction to the original trilogy when they were younger. So I'm looking forward to that aspect of it. But yeah, I did see it Sunday. That's the longest answer I could possibly give to that small question.
Well, you bring up a really good point that, and since my viewing of Star Wars, you know, I've listened to a couple of podcasts about it, and I've read a couple of articles here and there, which all of these things that I was avoiding leading up to it. And of course, I had dinner with my family after it, had a chance to talk about it, and been trying to formulate my own thoughts coming up into this podcast. But one of the things that I have to remind myself over and over again is that Star Wars right now is definitely made for kids. It always has been, but it's aimed at a younger target than we remember the original trilogy being aimed.
I think 15 is like between 10 and 15 are age group.
I would skew even younger. I would say between 7 and 12 is where they're aiming all of these movies. And yes, there's content for older people, and they're serving both. And I would say The Last Jedi serves both quite well, but the main focus is definitely on the younger kids.
Yeah.
And I mean, you get it in the levity of it and the themes and the ships and toys. And, like, I mean, Star Wars has always had that. But when I watched the movies when I was 10, like when I saw the original trilogy, I didn't watch them thinking, oh, these are amazing. These are great movies that are meant for me. It was these movies that were just made for a slightly older crowd that were safe for you to watch. Like, they weren't, you know, R-rated. Like, I, you know, watching Alien when I was younger was not a, you know, it wasn't loud. It was an R-rated movie, you know, but Star Wars is fine. And so they just kind of skirted that kind of PG-13, you know, wheelhouse. And I feel like they, you know, when you think about and you want to be critical about movies like Force Awakens and Last Jedi, you do have to say like, okay, well, I'm not going to get the adult sci-fi that I want. Like, you're not going to get Battlestar Galactica. Mm-mm. You know, yeah. Star Wars is going to be a little bit more family friendly, but these ones I want to say are much younger. I am a Star Wars fan. I mean, I grew up, mm-hmm. you know, watching Star Wars. I was born in 79, so they were already out, you know, and ahead of me as a really young kid. But I believe I don't think I saw Return of the Jedi in the theater. I want to say I did, but I feel like I would have been too young. I don't think my dad would have taken me to go see that. I only would have been 4 or 5. But I do remember seeing them when I was quite young. You know, older friends and older cousins, you know, would have them on, you know, at the holidays and stuff like that. But I remember being a big fan of them growing up, as I was able to watch them on VHS. And then once mm-hmm. the original trilogy was re-released in 97 in the theaters, me and my friends in high school all went to go see them because we were all 16, 17, you know. And that was a lot of fun. Seeing them on the big screen was definitely a great experience. And I did get that with The Force Awakens, and I did get that with The Last Jedi, but I've had a very different feeling with The Last Jedi. So, I mean, as a Star Wars fan and knowing that we're talking about a Star Wars movie, and it's kind of funny, like, you can't really review a Star Wars movie without kind of, like, acknowledging where it's come from and what it is. I don't think it was a particularly good Star Wars movie. And there's a big part of me that feels bad for even saying that out loud. Like, it's one of these things where, like, I don't know if I liked it. And I didn't hate it. I didn't dislike it. But, like, in terms of, like, when you leave a Star Wars film, usually you're just like, yeah, that was Star Wars. Like, because it doesn't compare to anything else. Like, you can't, Star Wars and Star Trek are just so different. Like, you can't really compare them as far as, you know, from a fan perspective. So when I left this, I was just like, yeah, I mean, it was good, but I wasn't elated. Like, I wasn't on the edge of my seat, and I wasn't really as excited as I had been with pretty much every other Star Wars film that I had seen before, including some of the prequels, which are not terribly good movies. You know, like, I remember leaving The Phantom Menace for the first time going like, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And rewatching it later going like, I don't know what I saw in this. But, you know, and some of that also comes from, like, you know, comes from your state of mind and, like, what other movies have come out lately and how people mm-hmm. are handling the things that you like. But I'm not saying I disliked it. It's not a terrible movie. I've seen worse. You know, I've certainly left, for example, Justice League. That was a hot mess. Like, no, you know,
I didn't see that one.
So when you come out of something like Justice League, which is the last movie that I saw in theaters, and go into Star Wars, this was a much better film. You know, like, there's certain things that you can say, okay, so, like, it didn't completely fail, but I think the battle, and I don't envy any director that gets behind the wheel of a Star Wars film, is this hill of expectation that they have to climb that the fans have put out, you know, and people want what they want. And if they don't get it, then they scream blue bloody murder on the internet. And I'm not one of those people that's going to be out there going like, ah, here's all the things that I, you know, hated about Last Jedi. I've seen some people that have said that. And one of the reviews that I read was from a friend. He's another cartoonist, Denver Brubaker. And it was actually kind of heartbreaking. He was really sad. He was like, I didn't like it. And I'm really bummed that I didn't like it. Like, he was hurt. And I was like, that sucks. Like, it's not, he's not angry. He's past that. He's now in the, like,
he's accepted the movie exists.
And yeah. He's in the, I got broken up with phase, you know, like, it's not a good place to be when you're a fan, when the expectations that you set out are just not met at all. You know, yeah. It's emo Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man 3, you know, it's things that are just out of place. And I think that you know, to kind of get the litany list out of the way, in general, I think the things that they did well, they did very well. Mm-hmm. But I think the things that they failed at were things where they were trying too hard, if that makes any sense. There's a lot of humor in this movie and a lot of legitimate funny moments. But it was like, okay, that's like the fifth joke in a row. Like, it you know, it got to the point where it's just like, okay, are we doing joke wars or are we doing Star Wars? And it wasn't as bad as, I shouldn't say bad, it wasn't as thick as Thor Ragnarok was with the humor, but there was a lot of moments where just like, okay, porgs are cute, I get it, but like this is the fifth take of porg nesting someplace where it shouldn't nest. And you know, and that kind of stuff to me got really old. And the problem there is that it pulls me out of being lost in Star Wars because it's such an immersive universe that pulls me back and go, oh yeah, right, some director made a decision to make another joke about this stupid fluffy animal. And those kind of things are the things that kind of haul me out of the movie experience. Whereas other moments like the link between Kylo Ren and Rey that they were illustrating in the movie were both new, well done, interesting. You had no idea what was going on. Mm-hmm. And filmed in a unique way. Like all of that was just like, yeah, I'm on board with this new kind of thing. It's like, we've never seen this before. This is awesome. And I think that those moments were just not like they'd be peppered with or bookended with things that would take you right out of it. It's like, no, just, I was there. You had me. And then you made a Chewy joke. And it's like, oh shit. Like
it. Yeah, the Force connection stuff was really powerful because at the beginning it gave Ben and Rey the ability to confront each other about the fact that Kylo had just killed Han Solo not too long ago, mm-hmm. and the first few initial Force connections were her like just breaking down and be like, why'd you do it, and Adam Driver, fantastic, Daisy Ridley, fantastic, both amazing, you know, mm-hmm. inheritors of the Star Wars franchise. And I think that's like, not to skip to the end, but that those connections, those Force connection scenes kind of leave, if anything, should leave people happy that Episode 9, which will be solely new generation characters, which I think was the plan all along,
yep.
Even if, you know, Carrie Fisher hadn't passed away, I think we still would get a solely new generation focused Episode 9. Mm-hmm. And the fact that their acting chops are shown so well in connection scenes, which are tough because you can clearly tell that the way they shot it is two different scenes and they're bouncing off each other as if they're in the same room.
Yep.
And the humor didn't bother me because I think it's more of a personal thing. I like sort of quirky humor peppered in. It's never bothered me. And when people say it bothers them, I get it. But I also say, like, man, just don't focus on it. You know, just look past it. Like, the nesting stuff, to me, it was just like, porgs are cute, porgs are fine, and they're invasive species towards the Millennium Falcon. I've accepted that. Let's move forward. And I think the most, the best bit with the porgs that could have been seen as both way too quirky and funny, but also taking one of a beloved character, not to mention there's a lot of like beloved characters in this movie that kind of get twisted and turned into something that I'm sure the long-term fandom really hated. So Chewbacca being like a side character for funny quirkiness, he's the pilot now, and him eating the porgs in front of the porgs, I thought was just, it was a long form joke that I thought went really well and I really enjoyed it. But I'm sure there are people that just hated it because they could have cut it and it would have had no impact on the film. But I loved it.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that I thought was funny at first. Hmm. But there's this trend with humor right now in Hollywood where they've got to beat a dead horse with a wet rag until the very, very end. And again, like, it's funny when it's a shortcut of a very clear porg that's been roasted. Which looked weird to me, but
and like one of those mini chickens you get at Walmart.
Yeah, you know? Exactly, right? But then, you know, and all you have Chewbacca open up his mouth and just stop and look up and see one porg looking at him. And if that's the end of the scene, that's funny, right? But then there's this like cutback tennis match between like porg doe eyes and Chewbacca thinking about it and kind of like thinking more, and then there's more porg doe eyes. It's like, okay, I get it. And that's the problem where I feel like the humor is like, we got to make sure that the kids get the joke and laugh and find it funny. If we just make it a short scene, all the adults are going to laugh and all the kids are going to miss it. And I, I, I don't think they have malicious intent, but for me as an adult, it really doesn't sit very well.
I think they just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I don't think they're sitting here thinking we got to sell toys and we got to make sure the kids get the joke.
But it's, cause
pretty clear and it's made funnier as it overstays its welcome. Yeah. And I think that was it out of the entire movie. I feel like that moment was there. Let's stick this one out a little longer because it's funnier the longer it goes. And this movie has a lot of bad stuff happening in terms of just bad vibes. It's just really negative. Oh, yeah. A lot of tough stuff happening around the world. So if you can kind of, intersect it with these funny moments to lift the load a little bit, I think that's where they're coming from. It works sometimes, it doesn't work others, but I felt like that extended pork scene was really well done. But I don't have this huge connection to Chewie and the fact that he has been converted to, you know, a yelling pilot slash comedic relief. And he wipes away one tear for Han Solo, I think, is his other scene. But it is what it is, and they're moving towards the future generation. Now that I think about it, I guess Chewie, I mean, he's a new generation because there's a new actor in there. It's the same Chewie, but it's, it's a new actor. So I feel like, I just feel like the humor's there because they thought it was funny. But you're right. There are moments where it kind of is injected in the wrong way, like a powerful scene.
And it just goes on for too long, you know. And for example, like opening battle, fantastic opening battle, you know, and a great way to kick off a Star Wars film, you know, and just stuff blowing up everywhere. You get all this action. You got, you know, hotshot pilots doing their thing and like all that kind of stuff is great. And then it's all brought to a grinding halt with this telephone gag with Poe Dameron. And like, I think, and the issue there for me is this, like, it's modern Earth humor in Star Wars, you know, like, it's all of this stuff is subjective, right? I mean, like, you like the humor, I don't like the humor, so I don't want to beat a dead horse, you know, see what I did there.
But if you make a holo call, sometimes people aren't there. You got to put them on hold.
Well, I get that. But I think that, again, it just went on for a really, really long time to the point where you're just kind of like, how stupid are these people on the bridge that they don't get that he's messing with you?
But this is and I agree with you. The phone call gag was pretty bad. And I think it speaks to Poe's character as being someone who's just overly cocky. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, General Hux hit his head really hard in between episode 7 and 8. Maybe the explosion knocked him down from Starkiller Base, because he got real stupid real quick. He became comedic relief for this film. I don't really have a problem with that, but I have a problem with it by the end of the film, because at the end of the movie, you have two kids running the First Order.
Yeah.
Which pretty much writes the ending to episode 9 as being, there are two kids running the First Order. Of course the Resistance win. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the only fact that the First Order has got a leg up is because there's like 8 people in the Resistance now.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them being a very powerful Jedi. And then the First Order just happens to have a lot of cool, like, you know, knuckle-walking AT-ATs, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. With you run by two college roommates, you know.
They just seem so young, and I know, like, yeah. I know I'm considered young to a lot of people, but I feel like Kylo Ren being this person who's still very wild and passionate, and then General Hux, who's now been made into this bumbling fool. It just seems like a very very poor pairing.
No, and I agree. And I think the issue that they have is that, you know, when they did the Force Awakens, they cast a bunch of young actors into these roles, thinking like, sweet, we got to get some people that are going to want to be in this. We get some people that are going to want to be the new helm, whether it's, you know, the bad guys or the good guys. And unfortunately, I feel like they cast Hux too young. You know, like, feel like, because I mean, when you look at how old he's supposed to be and how he acts, you're like, well, how did you get to be the right-hand man to Snoke, militarily, you know, speaking, at all? Like, have you even been in the First Order long enough to be up the ranks? Like, when you hear Phasma speak, she sounds older than him. So, like, you know, you wonder kind of why she isn't higher up the chain. that kind of stuff. Well, for example, the guy that comes in on the Dreadnought, and I don't know all the characters' names because I only just watched it yesterday, but the guy that's the captain of the Dreadnought, he, to me, speaks to being a seasoned First Order, you know, veteran. And it is no surprise that he is at the helm of a Dreadnought in there to, you know, cause some havoc, you know. But when I see, you know, Hux, he's like, I don't really believe that necessarily he's, you know, as high up as and as revered as he is. And again, like you said, once he opens his mouth in this movie, it's funny, like in Force Awakens, you had Snoke, who is this mysterious, you know, deep, slow-speaking, evil manipulator, and then you had Kylo Ren in Force Awakens, who was basically a petulant child throwing a tantrum the whole time.
But Hux in Force Awakens, he gives that speech to the First Order, and it sends chills down your spine because it's like, holy shoot, they are leaning into space Nazis here. Like, yeah, they're leaning into that, and you really feel like General Hux is giving like a Nazi propaganda speech.
And I agree.
It gives you shivers. And then you see in this movie where they completely drop that and make the First Order kind of feel like the old Empire, which is, we got more spaceships than you, we're going to beat you. And they're overconfident. Except, you know, Hux isn't the Tarkin we remember. Tarkin being very confident and powerful.
Especially just seeing Tarkin in Last Christmas, you know, in Rogue One.
Yeah, he had more backbone as a CG character.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is like, we've already given a spoiler warning, but I mean, Snoke dies quite early on in terms of, you know, the climax of the movie. And so then you're left with Kylo Ren and Hux running things. So you don't get the feeling that there's a real threat there. Like, you know, because in the movie, Kylo Ren does not feel like a threat to the rebellion. He feels like a threat to Rey, right? Like, it's more of a personal, honed-in target. They kind of separate that stuff out. But Hux in this film reminded me of Kylo from the first one, where he starts to whine a lot. Every time he opens up his mouth, he's complaining and giving an excuse. And I think even Snoke says something to that effect. But yeah, anyway, it's those kind of things that the Last Jedi kind of has to deal with, some of the groundwork that they laid in Force Awakens. And I don't necessarily think that they deal with it very well.
I feel like it was Rian Johnson being, I don't like the sandbox I was given. Mm-hmm. Let's hit the reset button now. And to me, I have no problem with that. Again, as not being a Star Wars fan, I see this as an opportunity to create three unique and totally different servicing films. And you have the first one being, hey, Star Wars is back. You have the second one being, okay, Star Wars is going to be brand new from here on out. Then you have the third one being, I have no idea what the third episode in this trilogy is going to be.
Yeah, that message was clear early on when the rebellion got their ass handed to them in the space battle, because first of all, you kind of get that Empire Strikes Back vibe where, like, you know, the rebels lose. But I also felt like at some point after the first act, I was sitting there kind of like, okay, I really don't know where this is going. I thought I did, but already there's been enough paths laid out that's like, I'm not entirely sure that this is going to go the way that you think, which is like one of the lines Luke Skywalker says in the movie. And it's true in that they deviate in a lot of good ways. Like, I really like this reinvention of like what the Force is and what a Force wielder should be. Because Luke is talking a lot about the Jedi need to die. The Jedi, you know, if you look at the history, the Jedi done screwed up. Like, they're not a lot. I mean, there's some years of peace, but some of the biggest mistakes ever were oversights by the Jedi. Not that he's saying that Sith are good, because they're just murderous assholes. So there's this balance that they talk about in the movie, and the way that Luke explains it and kind of, you know, gives Rey some lessons about what the Force is and what it should be, I thought were really, really well done. And it does kind of take that Etch-a-Sketch and give it a shake and be like, hey, you remember that Mandalorian crap that they threw on us? Forget it. That's not a thing. They really kind of bring back the mysticism, and there's lots of references to religion. The island that Luke is on is an ancient Jedi temple, so it's like it's very, very old. It gives you some of the feeling of how old the idea of studying and thinking about the Force is, you know. Mm-hmm. And I really, really enjoyed that, especially as someone that, you know, goes back when Star Wars was just like, I can just lift stuff with my mind. It, like, I don't have to explain it. That's just part of what happens in this universe. Part of the long time ago in a galaxy far away. Like, you don't have to explain everything. So, I appreciate that. I think the other thing I really liked is the theme that Kylo Ren was putting out, which was like, burn the past down, like get rid of everything, you know, just forget where you come from, forget dark, light, just let's just be Ben and Rey. No, he doesn't. I don't think he says Ben. She keeps on calling him Ben, but just let's just be you and I. Let's just do this together. He's coming from it still from an evil point of view. Like he represents
burning salt the earth, yeah, control order. Yeah,
exactly. But the message is correct, but the motivation is wrong, right? He's talking about balance. He's like, you know, screw the light, screw the dark. Let's just have it all bottled up and just, you know, have it all swirl around, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think where he butts head with Rey is that he probably, and the way the Sith have butt heads with the Jedi is that the Sith want order, the Jedi want order, but neither of them want the others in control. And that's what they see it as. It's like, well, your idea of order is a dictatorship. Well, your idea of order is a bunch of space laser sword dudes sitting in a council room debating who to train next and why they're better than everybody else. And that's, and I can totally understand why people who are huge Star Wars fans just hated The Last Jedi. I know you said you didn't hate it, but I can understand why super fans have hated it, because it is literally taking their childhood and saying, like, we're going to do something new. You know, you expect Luke to be this, benevolent trainer. It's like, oh yes, you bringing me my lightsaber that I haven't seen for 30 plus years. Now he tosses it over his shoulder and it's just like, what are you doing here? Leave. And he's the hermit and he doesn't want to be bothered. And they really hammer that home with the fact that he's more interested in milking, you know, sea creatures than he is talking to Rey. And so
those are the kind of things where, like, it's a good theme. Like, I get why he's secluded and why he wants nothing to do with all of it, right? Like, he's discovered the problem and that he is part of the problem, so he's exiled himself. The issues that I have with that is, like, you can achieve the same message by using a really stern face, you know, some excellent acting from Mark Hamill, which he was good in this, and have him just walk up to Rey, say nothing, and shove that thing back in her hand. I felt like tossing it over his shoulder was dumb. Like
it was a joke, right? It was one of those jokes.
It was one of those jokes where, like, this is the giant end scene of the last movie, and you just kind of said, "Nah, that really wasn't supposed to be that important." But the whole, like, the swell of the music from the last movie was that scene. It was obviously important. And he just kind of like, nope, no, it wasn't. And so that to me was like, yes, okay, you've been painted into a box by the previous film, but it is your job as a director, if you don't want to play in that box, to smoothly transition into yours, not just like, you know, flip over the Monopoly board and say, nope, we're doing something else. You know, and that to me, I think, is like some of the changes were just a little bit too abrupt. And some of the things that Luke did, like all the walking up the stairs, all the short conversations, like the grumpiness, totally on board. It's all very Star Wars. I mean, when Yoda and Luke first meet on Dagobah, Yoda is all quirky and weird and giving him a hard time, and he's not, you know, being straightforward with him. It's like, it's perfectly fine. But the issue that I had was the really weird stuff. Like, what was the point of the pole vault fishing tour? what was the point of the milking the weird beast thing and showing Luke have a giant mouthful? Like, it just, it was disgusting. It wasn't funny.
I think it was budget. It was just, they had the budget to, there's an article out there where they talk about the milking scene, which was maybe 30-second payoff, and the fact that they had to create a puppeteer, a two-person puppet where people are inside and then a team controlling everything else elsewhere. And then they had to CG the milk because it was actually a white milk that tasted fine that he drank, and they CG'd it green later. It's an issue of having a large budget and they can do whatever they want. And what they wanted to do was have Luke, you know, call back to the milk stuff. And here's the thing is that this movie, there's a lot of these little things that we can nitpick, but as a whole,
right.
I really enjoyed it as someone who is just learning to be a huge fan of Star Wars. And to me, Star Wars was the swelling of the music, the space battles, the mm-hmm. lightsabers, everything. Yeah. And then in this movie, for the most part, it had that. It had what I was looking for in a Star Wars film. And the fact that it surprised me, which doesn't happen at all in most media, like you don't feel surprised anymore. In this, when the force connections, where you get that connection between Rey and Ben, and they're having conversations about Han Solo and light and dark and all that fun stuff, and then when Rey goes to bed and he kills Snoke. I didn't see that coming. Everyone just assumed Snoke would be the bad guy throughout, and then it would be just the original trilogy. And that, I think that's the best part about this, is that it's saying, no, we're not going to be the original trilogy. We're killing the big bad now. And that's, imagine if Vader had taken out Darth Sidious and Vader ended up being the bad guy in the third one. And he didn't turn back. He just kept being the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, because to me, Darth Vader turning at the end made no sense. He'd been such a bad guy.
Yeah.
I don't think your kids coming back 20 years later is going to change anything for someone who's been so bad for so long. I mean, he killed an entire tribe of sand people and a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
You don't come back from that. I'm sorry.
No,
Kylo Ren killing Snoke, not for his own purposes, and those purposes just happened to be in line with what Rey was looking to do. And then they have that scene back to back. They gave you what you wanted, that you figured you would get at the end when Kylo becomes the good guy and they kill Snoke together and then they have to fight their way out. That was the conclusion to episode 9 and a lot of people's mindsets. And then you get it in the middle of this movie and it's just like, what is happening right now? And it's a really cool fight that honestly falls in the face of what people are saying is this being a kid's movie. She literally tosses a lightsaber across the room and he turns it on in the nick of time to go through someone's head. Are those things robots?
No, they're people, right? No, they're from what I can tell, they're supposed to be an updated version of Imperial Guard, which would be Force-sensitive individuals, not necessarily Jedi or Sith, but they would have been a lot of, basically, the way that the Sith usually roll is that there's always an apprentice, and then there's always a secret apprentice, because your apprentice either dies going out and doing your bidding, or potentially raises to try to kill you and take your, because once someone gets powerful enough and power-hungry enough, they realize, I want your job. And so the Sith apprentice usually kills the Sith master and becomes the Sith master. So the Sith master usually has more than one apprentice to try, one of which would try to protect him from the one that tries to overthrow him. Anyway, what I got from that fight was that these were supposed to be Imperial, an update to the Imperial Guard, which were, they were in the throne room in the Return of the Jedi. They had the long, long red robes and they were very sleek looking. I kind of preferred the older style. These ones looked a little bit more samurai-esque. Mm-hmm. But one thing that didn't happen, I'm glad it didn't, but I had this glimmer kind of the way, about halfway through the film where I was like, man, they really wanted to mess with people. Now, once they reached a point where I knew that we were going to get some new stuff and this was going in a direction that we had never seen before, I was wondering if we were going to see Ben choose the light side and have Rey end up being the villain for this whole trilogy. Like, just have it completely go, nope, all this dark, all the dark stuff that they're alluding to on the island with Rey and all this conflict with Ben. And I thought, man, if they bring Ben back from being dark and he ends up being this balance, but Rey ends up saying like, nope, I've discovered who I am and I am the villain of the story. That would have been really, really interesting to me. Not that I really wanted it, because I really enjoy Rey as a light side, you know, kind of battle for good, you know, conscience to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the highlights of the movie for me, is that scene where he kills Snoke. I unfortunately saw it coming, but that's just that's the problem with being a Star Wars fan, is that when they do nods to nostalgia and those kind of stuff, if you don't know any of that Sith stuff about Sith apprentices overthrowing their masters, you don't know it's coming, right? I mean, so like my family had no idea that was going to happen. But I feel like they might have shown a little bit too much with the lightsabers and stuff. Like, I feel like there could have been a moment there where you see the lightsaber turn on, but you didn't realize which one it was. That sort of stuff. But
like a gunshot, who fired first, kind of thing.
That kind of thing. But these are, and that's a tiny, tiny, tiny little thing. I loved the set dressing in that scene, having that red room and the way that Snoke was moving around, and the fact that you knew that he was a Force guy because he had used lightning before, and he was, you know, throwing Rey all over the place, and like, you really, up until the moment where Kylo Ren kills Snoke, you're just like, I don't know how Rey gets out of this. Like, you're just kind of like, I'm not really sure how this is gonna go. You know, like, is she gonna somehow turn around and be more powerful? And like, that's kind of tropey. So the fact, like, how they handled it was the correct way. I can't remember where I went. I had to go to the bathroom in the middle of the film. Andrea, my sister, said I didn't miss anything, but I don't remember the reason why Rey broke off in an escape pod and went down to the ship. Like, I don't remember how or why she gave herself up that way. So that,
I think because she felt like she could turn Ben. She felt like that connection that she had with Ben would allow her to turn him. And she felt like she would be able to turn him right up until he kneeled in front of Snoke, and then she started to panic. And I think that's where she gave herself up. And it was very Return of the Jedi of Luke walking in and being like, yep, I'm here, take my lightsaber, let's have a chat.
Yeah.
And the fact that they do it in this film with a character that we're not quite sure of, and with another character who we know is feeling great conflict, there is no redeeming, you know, Ben, because he killed Han Solo. People would have a riot.
Yeah.
If they redeemed him, and even in film, even in the movie, like in the movie universe, he's too far gone. And I don't think we get the whole Darth Vader, I'm sorry, death scene. I think we get him dying a terrible death. He's bad, and he plays it really, really well. He's still conflicted, but he's too far gone into the whole, we must preserve the universe through order. And I love the progression we get with him in this movie. And I felt like Kylo Ren in The Force Awakens was kind of like, oh yeah, up until he killing his killing of his father, he feels very like iffy. But then he kills Han Solo and it's like, whoa, shit, they're serious about this guy. He is the bad guy. And in this, by the end, you feel like he's the bad guy, but still a little bit, you know, conflicted.
Yeah.
In that he just doesn't know how to be the real good bad guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, we can talk about like the other stuff that popped up, like Rey's parentage, the fact that Kylo says, you know it, you know the truth already. And they hint/reveal that her parents are nobodies, which we all kind of felt was the only way you tell a story is that she is a nobody. Why would she be connected to anyone? But people are still latching onto the fact that, oh, well, Kylo's a Sith, or he's a bad guy, and he could easily have been lying to use that to bring her to the dark side. But I don't know. I feel like that's just internet conjecture. Like, I think she really is a nobody. You know, Anakin was a nobody.
Yeah, and Luke, we later found out, wasn't a nobody, but in the first movie, if you look at episode 4, if you look at Star Wars, on its own without anything else, Luke's a nobody. He's a moisture farmer, right? So like so that, I mean, you find out later on who he is, and Ben knows who he is, but like it's not in the beginning of the movie. In the to go on the adventure, you don't have to be anybody special. I don't know. I'm on the fence as to whether Kylo Ren was telling Rey what she wanted to hear in order to get her to join him and playing on those that weakness, or if it really is just that simple and it's like, nope, you know deep down that there's nobody. That's why. But I mean, if that's the thing, like when she went into the dark side cave sort of thing and she asked for to see her parents, and then instead of the dark side showing her parents or giving her any kind of information, they just show her herself. But it's like, well, how are you, you know, how does that really work? And that is confusing to people, because in Empire Strikes Back, when Luke goes into the Force cave, he fights a projection of Vader, and when he kills him, it's Luke underneath the mask, and it's the dark side kind of saying, like, you know, he's your dad, he is your father, like you could become him if you go down the wrong path, sort of thing. And so Rey seeing herself in the dark side, like that's where I was thinking, like, oh man, like, what if, like, she is the dark side, or she is some sort of embodiment of the dark side. So they, I mean, they raise a lot of questions. I think the problem is that people want some sort of cool lineage for Rey, like they wanted some, like they have some sort of cool lineage for the Skywalkers, right? Like, I'm not saying that it's right or wrong that they didn't get it. I'm just like, I understand why people are upset that, because Rey is an Rey is a really interesting and intricate character that we still know very little about, and that's frustrating as a viewer. And I find it frustrating
to not know the backstory when you've had 30 plus years to know the backstory for Luke, Leia, and Han. Mm-hmm. We've been able to explore those characters for 30 plus years, and now they drop Rey in, and it's like we've had 2 or 3 years with her and we know nothing. But it's 3 years compared to 30. And Disney, this is Star Wars. Disney didn't pay billions of dollars for Star Wars, Lucasfilm, to develop 3 films and stop. I fully believe,
oh yeah,
you know, they're going to keep going, and maybe we'll get like a Rey lineage or something. I don't know what they'll do, but Star Wars does not rest for long before they come back to what has always worked, which is the episodes, the main episodes. You know, I think we'll get more. Like, we'd be laughing if we thought Disney would let this thing rest, or even Lucasfilm would let it rest. But I think the parentage works really well if they are nobodies, because it removes one more weird connective tissue that they have to sort out and prove. This is the problem with something that's been around for so long. It's nitpicked to death by people.
Oh, like, yeah.
If they don't fit it just perfectly, then you are going to upset a lot of folks. And if you don't have to fit it perfectly, and it's just like the Force, you know, it doesn't matter. Yeah. She just happens to be a really good Force user. But then it's hard to explain some of the stuff in The Force Awakens where she is called by Anakin's lightsaber. She's seeing these visions. And
here's Obi-Wan's voice from it. Like
that. Yeah, and it kind of makes you think that there's something else going on. And they could easily explain it as like, the Force ghost Obi-Wan is trying to save, like we saw it with Yoda appearing, which again was another huge thing for me, because again, not being a Star Wars nerd or a Star Wars super fan, not you're forgetting, like, oh man, they can appear as ghosts. Luke had said that he had closed himself off to the Force, so that's why we haven't been seeing them. And suddenly he opens himself up. Who appears but his old master, Yoda, in puppet form, which should have had every Star Wars nerd just flipping out for like amazingness. How long have we had to hear about Yoda being a CG person as opposed to a puppet?
Right.
My gosh, how many articles, how many lists? I was sick of it. And the fact that he's back as a puppet for this brief cameo. And do we know if he was voiced by Frank Oz? I'm assuming he was.
Yes, he was.
Oh, that's see.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell by just watching it, but yeah, I've got the IMDb open, and I'm pretty sure. Yeah, Frank Oz. Yeah.
And that's really awesome. And the fact that he appears, maybe there's some sort of like, maybe Obi-Wan was speaking through the lightsaber, through the Force. I mean, you could invent anything. They've created new Force stuff in this film that you could easily inject into the third film to explain all that stuff away. But I do get the sense that Disney doesn't have an overall outline. Like, they have an outline, but they have a beginning and end. And as long as they get to that end from the beginning, they don't care what happens in between. Mm-hmm. So they let these directors go willy-nilly. And I think that's where you saw the firing of Colin Trevorrow with episode 9. Maybe Disney didn't like the path he was taking to get to the end.
Yeah.
You know, and I really strongly sense that. And the fact that they give Rian Johnson the middle, where he can do whatever the hell he wants, including killing Snoke, which is pretty interesting. Maybe Snoke was always supposed to die in the second film, but he also feels like someone we know nothing about, yet you want to know everything. He's responsible for the rise of the First Order. Where the hell did he come from?
Yeah. And those are the kind of questions where I didn't necessarily want them to be all explained, but you feel like you have to have, you know, some sort of, I mean, it's funny. There's enough villain monologuing in this movie by Hux and Phasma and some of the other places where you're just kind of like, they don't give one really to Snoke, where he explains, you know, he mansplains things, you know, to Rey. And I don't necessarily say that that's the best way to do it, but I feel like there could have been more in Luke's explanation of what happened the night that he lost Ben, you know, and lost him to Snoke. I feel like rather than just a single kind of like sentence story, we could have got some flashbacks of Skywalker, Solo, you know, doing some training, having that first encounter, you know, with Snoke and Ben, and some, like, somehow just kind of giving that just a little bit more weight. And I think they could have handled it better. There's things in this movie, like you said, like, you know, not to nitpick everything, but what happens for me is that the small nitpicks, they add up once they start doing a lot of them. And that's where I think people are just, they seem so vocal about this one tiny little thing, but what they're upset about is not that one thing. It's the 20 things that are out of place for them.
And the death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah, right? And it's difficult that way. Now, I mean, the broad strokes, I do feel the movie got right. Like, there's some great scenes with, I mean, Luke's message of like, I'm out of it and I'm staying out of it, and he stays out of it. Like, he doesn't actually come back into it. The reveal at the end there, when he brings himself into the battle and causes Kylo Ren to make some of the biggest rookie mistakes ever, you know, in battle, because he's force projecting himself, you know, across the galaxy to be there and have everybody think that he's there. It allows for a really touching scene with Luke and Leia, which you would never get because, unfortunately, Carrie Fisher has passed away. So, like, I'm glad they did all that, and they did all that very, very well. And I was fooled. Like, I didn't pick up on some of the articles that I've read since. When they make a big deal about the salt and the red reveal, and when Luke is maneuvering on the field with his lightsaber, he doesn't move the salt. His feet don't move the salt. And I didn't catch that at all. So I was trying to figure out, like, all right, so I get that Luke Skywalker is a big, powerful Jedi, but, like, this is kind of crazy. Like, he just took a barrage from these AT walkers. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the full name of them is. But, like, he just takes this complete landslide of laser fire, and it's standing there like nothing happened. I'm just like, I don't really understand. Now, once I realized he wasn't there, I was like, that's brilliant. Like, when they did the full-on reveal, the lightsaber goes through him, and then they cut at some point to Luke hovering, you know, back on his island. I was like, that is smart. Like, he didn't cave. He said to Rey, I'm not coming. Get the hell off the rock. And he doesn't go. And I feel like that was, you know, that was really well done. But then there's other, then the nitpick that I have about that is, like, you know, one of the biggest things that drives the rebels to run deep into the caves to escape, the one way that you can get out the back way, is that, right. Well, how did Luke get in here?
That is true, and all a little lucky, because it could have been like, well, shit, a dead, and they did find a dead end.
He forced himself in here with his Jedi powers, and shit, we thought he actually got in, you know.
That is an interesting plot hole that I guess is just, you kind of have to look past it. But I agree, him appearing fooled me as well, because again, it's not a power that we've seen before.
Exactly.
Into that magnitude.
New. Yeah, they did something.
And him appearing, I guess like the salt was the one, and also his appearance, him having like a dyed beard and being a little more, a little less raggedy. Mm-hmm. But you could have seen that him just being like getting primed and proper for a great showdown. But the fact that he provokes Kylo Ren into a showdown and apologizes and says, I failed you. It was what we needed, because I agree, the explanation for Luke, like, here's my biggest concern. If you're a huge Luke fan, your first introduction to Luke is being this hermit who hates all lightsabers, and also being this person that almost killed his nephew by choice.
Yeah.
And it just reeks of, you couldn't have had a conversation with the kid. You had to go into the dark of night and try to kill him with your lightsaber. Like, I don't believe.
Yeah.
I don't believe anybody's Luke would jump to that conclusion right away, especially when it's Han and Leia's kid. Exactly. I didn't believe that. And the only reason I'm not more upset about it is because it was one of those things. The movie didn't put much emphasis on that, didn't put much, you know, into those scenes. So I didn't take much away from them.
Yeah.
But I could see if they had tried to explain it a little more, maybe gone down a different path. But they knew what they needed. They knew the result they needed, which was for Luke to be disgraced and Ben to become a bad guy. But I much liked the way The Force Awakens was showing it up, as it wasn't Luke's fault. It was just all Snoke and Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought. It's like in the first film, it's like, well, Kylo was the bad guy, and Luke was just an innocent bystander that didn't catch this darkness in time.
Yeah.
And it still would have worked out for the plot of The Last Jedi.
Exactly. Yeah. You didn't have to make Luke this bad guy. And I mean, Yoda goes on about failure and how it's this big lesson. And it's the theme of the whole film. It's like, you know, Poe fails, Leia fails. I mean, everybody screws up. The whole rebellion fits on the freaking, you know, on the Falcon at the end of this thing. Like, they lose hardcore. And I think that they could have handled it in, you know, for example, a whole sequence that we won't talk about because we haven't even touched on it is the sequence on the casino planet. You can cut that entire sequence, all of it, gone. Does not affect the film. You can find another way to write in the hacker stuff. And you could spend the time maybe showing Ben Solo sparring with another Jedi trainee and maiming them or hurting them, or, you know, maybe he's bullied and he lashes out and he nearly kills a kid.
That, right?
Yeah.
And so I saw it in his training, and they don't
hammer it home. Like, they don't you can't feel the horror that Luke feels by Luke just saying, I was horrified. Like, it doesn't have any weight when you're watching a film and you're talking about something that happened, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And if they had done something where they show a sequence where, you know, show Luke at the bedside of some kid that's just been scorched by force lightning that he didn't know Ben could do, you know, and you can see the decision being made. No words have to be even said, you know, like there's stuff like that where I think, like, okay, yes, it's a Star Wars film. Yes, there has to be some cool new shiny stuff. But like, I don't necessarily need like this reindeer race.
It was the pod race.
And like all this kind of stuff, and all of it just didn't really, it's served, you know, Finn and Rose's story, which was ultimately the most uninteresting, unbelievable part of the whole film.
Oh, you don't buy that? You don't buy that?
Not in a million years. So thin. It didn't make any sense at all.
One of them is a kid ripped from his childhood. So the thing about Finn and Rose is, I agree, the casino was a missed opportunity. And honestly, I thought, perfect opportunity to bring Lando into this. Like, could you not see Lando popping up and being like, hey, what do we have here? You know, and they didn't do it. And the actor that actually played the real hacker that they were going after is fantastic. He's from the other guy who actually had the lapel that they were looking
caught.
He's from The Leftovers, and I was like, yes, if you watch The Leftovers, you know that he would have been fantastic for whatever they were going to do with him. And then they bring in Del Toro as this like smimy smuggler, and I was just like, no, guys, why is the collector here? I don't want to watch.
And Del Toro, people rave about Del Toro. I don't like him at all. I don't find him to be a good actor. Every time I see him in any film, I just think, oh, it's Del Toro. Like, I don't ever melt into the character that he's portraying. And for me, he was a distraction the whole time. Nothing. He communicated some interesting themes for, like, you know, weapons dealers sell to both sides. You guys are always at war. But he, like, other than that, he doesn't really serve a purpose other than being distracting and being a real scoundrel, in that he doesn't come back and save the day. He just takes his money and runs. And like, again, like the whole sequence with, I mean, you could have had Finn in a coma this entire movie and it matters not.
I like Finn. Yeah. And I like Rose. And I feel like they're the kinship they're showing. And are they setting up a love triangle where like Rey was looking over at Finn at Rose's medicine bed, and I felt a little weirdness there. And then you forget that Poe and Rey haven't even truly met yet. And I don't have a problem with Rose, quote unquote loving Finn, and the awkward kiss works really well in the fact that Finn is this, you know, stormtrooper stolen at birth, knows nothing of what just happened. And he just sits there and the kiss just, he takes it and he's like, what is going on? And I thought it worked really well for the Star Wars. But I agree, the casino stuff was trying to tell a message in a very long-winded, like I'm doing right now. And I feel like you could have done it much shorter, remove Del Toro from the equation, and still had the outcome of tear through the heart of this place because it's evil. Learn that war is very muddled and that people are selling to both sides, and get them on the ship so you have the Finn Phasma face down, chrome dome, all that fun stuff.
Yeah,
and you get more space for exploring what people want, which are answers as to why Kylo Ren is a thing, Luke Skywalker is a hermit,
Snoke,
and Snoke.
Yeah.
And you could even remove the whole Snoke stuff. That can be explored in a book or a comic, and I'm sure they will, or they have.
Yeah.
But in the movie, what you really want to know is, why is Ben evil, and why did Luke allow it to happen?
Yeah.
And really all you get is a 30-second clip of him thinking about killing Ben, Ben waking up at the wrong moment, at the exact moment that Luke is like, I'm about to shut my lightsaber off now, and just reacting poorly.
Yeah.
And there's no conversation because he was already turned. He was already on Snoke's side. He was waiting for that moment to be pushed over the edge, and that was it. And I think that was the point of the small scene to kind of show it, is because Ben was already too far gone. And there was some other stuff in there that felt a little weird, but honestly, overall I really liked the film, and I thought that as a Star Wars movie, it was really well put together because it was different.
Yeah.
You know, I like that it's different.
It gets points for its originality, and there are certain sequences. Like, there's a lot of sequences that feel really, really good. You know, like opening battle, last battle, some of the moments that are new, like the Jedi stuff we mentioned, when I can't remember her name, the Admiral, she's played by Laura Dern.
I kept calling her Hordo.
Holdo? Yeah.
Yeah.
Admiral Holdo. Some of the Star Wars names are also, they could come up with some better, better names.
Just moving vowels around.
Yeah, exactly. Really, I mean, she does this amazing move when she takes, the cruiser and sends it into light speed through, or into Snoke's ship and cuts it in half. And the visuals and how they handled that, like the whole theater was just dead silent. Like, you could hear a pin drop. It was very, very effective. The last time I remember something as cool as that was in what's the second one called? Phantom Menace. Episode 2. Why am I blanking on the name of episode 2?
Clone Wars.
Attack of the Clones. Attack of the Clones, there's an asteroid belt chase with Jango Fett and Obi-Wan, and he's dropping these sonic charges that are blowing up the asteroids. And in the theater, it was the reverse. It was this enormous explosion of like a bass chord, and it was just very, very effective in terms of like cool and new and, oh my God, this is awesome. And that was the feeling I got when she took the spaceship through the Snoke's capital ship. What I didn't understand was why it took her so long to realize she should do that. Like, she stands there and looks out the window when everybody's getting blown up, and she's there forever. Like, they cut back to her 3 or 4 times, tearing up and watching people explode before she walks over to the console and drives the ship through them.
I think her concern was that she would take them all out with her.
Yeah.
Which I totally understand. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people complaining, like, well, why don't they just autopilot someone through the hyperdrive through every little thing they want to explode? And I think, A, you're the Rebels. You have a limited amount of these big ships. And she was desperate. She was going to die no matter what. So she figured, well, let's give it a shot. And, I mean, it's all about minimizing casualties. And if you do what she did, as you saw, the destructive path, it took out everybody but Finn and Rose and Phasma, you know, like, which was kind of luck of the draw. Everybody else was killed for the most part. And that's the destructive power of this hyperdrive through ships. And you don't use that lightly, as you saw, because it was so destructive. And I think that was the main thing, is she was trying to let those ships go a little farther before trying that. But it could also have been like she was just slow on the gun. I don't know.
If I walk away with that feeling, I'm not alone. So,
no.
You know, there could have been other things, you know, in the film that they could have pointed to maybe make that, you know, decision, like, you know, a short conversation, or maybe she's talking to herself, or, you know, hesitation with her hand over the trigger, like anything that you could say, like she's having some sort of internal conflict as opposed to her just kind of watching everybody get blown up. And again, it's an excellent, excellent scene that is just has this little nitpicky thing that kind of sticks with me. And I feel like that's kind of like the battle that I have with this whole movie, is that there's a bunch of really cool stuff, and then there's a bunch of little things that kind of pull me out of it. So I don't come down on the side of not liking it, but I don't come down on the side of like, that was amazing, go see The Last Jedi. It's go see The Last Jedi, form your own opinion. Don't listen to all the craziness online. Just go see it, have fun. But if you don't like it, don't feel bad about it, because you're not alone, right? And I think that's what I felt like for that little while that I had, you know, when I was coming back from dinner with my folks. I didn't really rant so much, because, I mean, they like Star Wars, but they're not as into it, so then they're not going to understand all of my grievances. So when I was coming back from, you know, that whole, you know, couple hours after the movie, I really felt alone. Like, I really felt like, damn it, I don't think I like this, and I feel really bad, and I feel like I'm going to be alone in the universe, that I'm the only one that doesn't like this movie. And it, you know, it was refreshing to kind of reach out and you know, talk to some people and see some chat rooms and, you know, do that kind of stuff, and realize, like, okay, so I'm not, there are some mixed reviews, and it's not, you know, knocking out of the park, and that's okay. I'm not saying that all Star Wars stuff has to knock it out of the park. I mean, Lord knows I was disappointed with Justice League. So, like, there's, you know, I feel like a lot of times, the other thing that could be in Star Wars is, not in their corner, but stacked against them, is there's been a number of movies lately in kind of like the nerd world that have been falling short. So when people put all their last hopes on Star Wars after, you know, Justice League and Batman v Superman, like, not just this year, but like the last few years, some big nerd properties, they've dropped the ball, and people are just like, we're damn tired of dropping the ball. And like, this was the one thing I thought was sacred, and now it's just like, I think Star Wars might be getting all of it. You know?
Yeah. I think that The Last Jedi isn't a bad film. It's just a lot of people loved it, a lot of people hated it, and it seems to be a 1 or 0, maybe a 0.5 in some occasions, like yourself. But here's the best part about Star Wars and the fact that Disney is running this thing. You're going to get one of these once a year. Yeah, it sucks that a mainline one doesn't really fall in line with your favorite thing ever, but we lived through the prequels. We all survived.
Yeah.
Everybody hated them. And you're going to get another one in like 6 months. So I'm not saying that those folks that hated it shouldn't shouldn't be upset. You have every right to be upset, but I feel like we should look at the positive here in that a lot of people did love this Star Wars film, and that we're going to get another one to tear apart in 6 months.
Yeah.
And that is an exciting time. Think about what happened with Marvel. Like, Marvel had a stinker and everyone was like, oh, Marvel's done. They failed us. But then they come out with three really good ones in the next couple of years. It's like,
yeah,
you're going to have some winners. You're going to have some losers. You're going to have some movies that try to do something different and fail in a lot of people's eyes and really succeed in others. And it's just the way they make movies. And the fact that they, like, Disney allowed them to do something different is kind of astonishing. You know, that usually takes big corporations quite a few movies to allow that creative freedom. If you look at Marvel, their initial offerings were very, very by the books. And then you look at Guardians, which I think is kind of the first one to kind of break off on its own and do something unique. That took a long time. And the fact that they're doing this in the what I would consider the second film, that's kind of awesome to me. Like, I think you can be upset with this film, but also be excited by what Disney is allowing people to do. And I think the biggest issue is that there are these core characters that are involved in stuff that doesn't really feel good.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, it's hard. I mean, you've got three major players coming back in three major movies, and two for two, you know,
yeah,
one of them
they've killed them off
one by one. And unfortunately, you know, the real world has lost Carrie Fisher. So, you know, you know, she's not going to be, you know, in or make it long into the third or the episode 9. So, you know, it's not a good feeling to see your childhood die in the movies. You
know? No, I agree. And the fact that JJ is doing the 9th film, I pretty much guarantee that you get the addressing of people saying, well, we miss our Luke. I think you get Luke as a Force ghost.
Oh, 100%.
I'd say a third of the film.
I 100% agree. Like, I mean, because of the way that he died and what we know, the fact that we saw Yoda in this one, like, I'm sure that Mark Hamill will be back as Luke Skywalker as a Force ghost, which is good. Like, it means that you're not going to get the grumpy Luke that people don't want. You're going to get the, I'm here to help. Like, I'm here to provide you Jedi Force guidance, you know, whoever that is. Like, and here's a really cool question. So, one last thing, but, you know, before we wrap this up, you know, looking forward and seeing, like, projecting kind of like what we know now and then what we hope to see in episode 9, is Luke going to be appearing to Rey, to Ben, to both?
Well, I got the sense that Rey, by choice, won't be appearing to Kylo any longer. I think we got that with the whole Millennium Falcon door closing bit, but I could see it. Like, we don't know how the Force Ghost stuff works. Like, do you have to welcome Yoda into your heart to see him appear?
No, I think they just, I think they can just appear.
Okay. Well, then in that sense, I could see Luke appearing to both, but Luke appearing to Ben would be more of a, you done effed up. It's okay to admit failure.
Mm-hmm.
There's still time. And I think because Ben has really nobody else, like, is Snoke going to appear? Can the Sith do, I don't think the Sith can do that,
right? No, as far as I know, it's a Jedi thing.
So in that aspect, I could see Luke appearing to Ben earlier in the film, but I really do think that Kylo will go full dark.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he'll go full dark side and then he'll lose that connection. But yeah, Luke's going to appear to both, and he might try to play both sides to kind of get everybody to realize that, like, this is a fool's errand. Like, you don't need to do this. And, but definitely appearing to Rey, like, that's 100% shoo-in. The Kylo stuff, I don't know. It depends. It really depends on where episode 9 picks up and how willing JJ is to make Kylo a likable character.
Yeah.
I think that's the only reason you put Luke and Ben in the same room, is if you're trying to create this balanced character like they did in The Last Jedi up until they did the whole film. Really just tried to make Ben seem balanced.
Yeah.
Even though he was clearly not.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as far as looking ahead, I wonder whether episode 9 will land softer after the expectations laid by The Last Jedi, right? So like, yes, we're going to get a lot of heat because we're changing a lot of stuff. But when people go into 9, they're like, okay, they changed stuff. I know they changed stuff. So I have maybe either lower expectations, or I go in expecting the unexpected, or I expect things to be on their head. And then it's maybe better received, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have no idea what they're gonna do.
Yeah.
The other thing, that this is, I think this is the first, no, I know this is the first Star Wars film that picks up immediately after the last one. Whereas they all have this huge patches of time that happens between them. You know, and that's what the scrolling thing is at the beginning, is like, oh, this is what happened in between the film that you saw last and this one. And episode 9, I don't know, but if that's going to happen years or months or whatever after this particular film, then that could be, to me, more interesting. You've got time for Kylo to really turn into a villain. You know, you've got time for Rey to start her own thing or do her own thing. Poe, you know, character development in areas where they need it. So I would be very curious to see where they go with episode 9. I mean, I'm obviously going to go see it. Like, I'm interested to see what they're doing with Star Wars. But yeah, it's one of those things where, for me overall, it's a good Star Wars movie, but not a great Star Wars movie. And that's where I think I was just like, just not quite satisfied with mm-hmm. what they did. That said, I do want to see it again. Like, I do want to go. It's like after that, it's almost like after that initial shock, you know, like, I didn't like Batman v Superman, but I have watched it more than once. Right. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of wondering if I go back and see this, like whether I will see some merit and see some of the things that I missed, maybe pick up on some Easter eggs as well, and just kind of try to get more value out of it. I think part of me wants to like it more, you know, in terms of like that guilt of not liking it that much. But yeah, I think everybody should go see it. If you're listening to this show, you've already seen it, but I'm curious as to whether you'll go again, you know, whether, you know, it's something you're going to recommend to friends, whether you're going to argue with friends. But if you have some thoughts, I would love to hear them. Write into thecitadelcafe@gmail.com and let us know. I know, Brockett wasn't able to join us tonight, but he is interested in talking about Star Wars, when he comes back in the new year. So, we might have another kind of touch base conversation where the people on the podcast have seen it more than once and might have some more stuff to talk about. But to wrap this up, the Internet Minute is brought to you by you guys. That's patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, where you can go to support the show. Everybody that has contributed this year has just been phenomenal. I really appreciate it. As I mentioned before, it helps pay for things like hosting and domain registration and all that kind of stuff. Actually, Ryan is the guy that helps us with all this stuff, so he's good to have on the show. Mm-hmm. So the Patreon community and the stuff that we've been doing in Minecraft and stuff has been really fun. So head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe and support the show should you desire to. For me, I have a couple of very quick picks. And they are both podcasts. And something I like to do every once in a while on the show is kind of point people towards some of my favorite podcasts. And as my time has grown short, I have noticed that there are just a handful of shows that I just do not miss. The first of them is The Daily Tech News Show with Tom Merritt, Sarah Lane, and guests. And the second is The Phileas Club, which is done by Patrick Beja, which he's also on Daily Tech News Show. But the Daily Tech News Show is precisely what it sounds like. It's Daily Tech News Show. It's very accessible. It's about a half an hour, maybe 40 minutes at most. But they have been just really knocking it out of the park the last 6 months. And it's always been good, but it's been really good, especially this fall. And then the Phileas Club, if you're not familiar, is once a month. So it's a low kind of like time investment. But what Patrick does is he gathers a bunch of podcasters from around the world, different countries, and they discuss world news for the month. And it's very insightful. It's really, really well done and unique in that it's not always bad news. The 100th episode for the Phileas Club was the most recent one, and they had Tom Merritt and a couple of other folks from around the world. I know his friend Turkey from Saudi Arabia was on, and they talked about the quote-unquote good old days. And so for a lot of people on the show, it was like the 70s and the 80s versus life now. and they were talking about the comparisons and the world political sphere at the time. So it wasn't necessarily a world news show, but it was more of like a glimpse into the past. It was almost like a history show. It was really, really interesting. So if you're at all interested in that kind of stuff, Patrick does a phenomenal job on the Phileas Club. I support both of them on Patreon. They both have Patreon accounts. So if you do like the shows and you want to support them, then go check them out. Do you listen to the Phileas Club, Ryan?
I haven't. I tried a couple times. Right now I'm in a weird podcast limbo where I have this interest to listen to a bunch of them, but have no time. I have kept up on the Citadel Cafe, another smaller niche podcast, but I have fallen off of, you know, the more daily ones and the beefier subject matter ones like the Phileas Club. But I've always been interested in the fact of Patrick bringing together these other folks who may be on a side that we don't necessarily agree with, like the whole Trump movement. Having someone on who's a Trump supporter,
right,
sounds fascinating to me, especially in the environment that Patrick sets up as. This isn't going to be Fox News where we yell at each other. We're going to have a solid conversation and listen to each other and have a human conversation. So, but I know he's tackled more of the European stuff that I just know nothing about. So that's where I think the fascinating side of that show really shines through.
Yeah, no, and that's something that I find it's hard to dig into, because at some point you're just like, okay, well, if this is all I have time for, do I really want to listen about some local Irish tech story or news story? Is this really going to affect me? But what's interesting about it is, like, after that stuff gets brought up, then other kind of more worldly or more thematic stuff starts to come up in the conversation. So even though it is technically a news related show, it turns into world commentary quickly. Mm-hmm. Which is always really, really insightful. For me, I feel your pain. Big shows like this one that go for an hour and a half, I find I have a hard time with, especially if they're more frequent. With the Phileas Club being only once a month, I usually find the time for it. That's why I like Daily Tech News Show. It is precisely the amount of time it takes me to do dishes between, basically it's like making dinner and cleaning up after. It's like the first half of Daily Tech News Show is making dinner, and then the last half is cleaning up after. So it fits in that nice little daily routine, right? But if you don't have that, like if you don't have that niche that or that crook that you can fit a podcast in, it's really hard for the daily stuff. They pile up.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And I've even the daily, like even the weekly stuff have started to pile up, and you have to kind of make those choices. And it's hard enough trying to, like, this week alone for producing podcasts is going to be a busy one as we try to prepare for the holiday next week. And some people would be more inclined to take a week off, but we try to keep the feeds because we know people who are traveling for the holidays want their podcasts. And
yeah,
it's nice to be one of those podcasts that is around during that busy time. So yeah, it can be tough to balance listening and producing. So,
well, speaking of, this is actually going to be the last episode of the Citadel Cafe for 2017. We're not going to be back until the first week of January. I'm not sure who's going to be back. It might be Hammond. It might be Brockett. We'll have to discuss that later on. But we are going to take some time off over the holidays. You can check out the show at thecitadelcafe.com. The music was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can reach us on Twitter and Facebook just by name. And as I mentioned, thecitadelcafe@gmail.com for the email address. My name is Joel Duggan. Everything that I am doing online right now is at joelduggan.com. Branches to all of my social media feeds are there. Ryan, where can people find you and the work that you're doing online?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at rmurphy, where I will be tweeting about video games and kids, my kids specifically. There's nothing creepy about that. I'm going to be tweeting about my kids. Every time I describe what I do on Twitter, I always do something weird. In describing that I tweet about my kids, I think I was on Current Geek last week and I said, you know, half of it's video games and half of it's my cute kids. And then Scott was like, oh, are you saying that your kids are half cute? I'm like, no, I'm not. They're full cute. They are full. They went full cute. Nice. It's me that's bringing them down. And so anyways, yeah, at R. Murphy on Twitter. I have been so bad at tweeting lately, but sometimes I get on a roll, so you can check that out. You can also listen to my active podcast, Gamers In, at gamersinpodcast.com, doing episode 300 this week. And then a deep dive on Horizon, the Horizon DLC expansion that they added, so that'll be fun. And yeah, Zombies Ate My Podcast, zombiesatemypodcast.com, where we have very, very big conversations about big TV shows like The Walking Dead. So check that out. Although we're going into a bit of a non-Walking Dead section, which should make people happy who don't really enjoy The Walking Dead. So it's where we get to be creative and come up with other topics. So I think this week, before we take a holiday break, we're going to be talking about 2018. And man, a lot of zombie video games, not much in the way of movies. So that's interesting.
Well, it's all about balance, right?
Yeah, it's just they make shitty zombie movies, and for some reason they can make really good TV shows about zombies. I don't know what it is.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.